Somewhat unbelievably, there are less than 3 weeks to go before Christmas. And our book reviewer, Alan Chews, has his annual list of gift ideas for book lovers. So grab your pen and paper so you can add some books to your list.
I don't think anything could be better than giving family and friends some of the best books of the year, beginning with two volumes by the late Paul Bowles from the Library of America series. This pair of books is a great gift for the literary connoisseur because it contains more than 50 of Bowles' brilliant short stories and a number of his travel essays, as well as pieces about Moroccan music and psychology, and the masterly existential novels of character and exotic settings that make Bowles one of the most admired writers of the second half of the 20th century. Many of you may have seen Bowles himself in the Bertolucci movie of The Sheltering Sky, reciting some of his own narration.
Because we don't know when we will die, we get to think of life as an inexhaustible well. Yet everything happens only a certain number of times, and a very small number, really. How many more times will you remember a certain afternoon of your childhood? Some afternoon that's so deeply a part of your being that you can't even conceive of your life without it. Perhaps 4 or 5 times more, perhaps not even that. How many more times will you watch the full moon rise? Perhaps 20.
As he dressed, that enchanting time of his daughter's birth filled his mind.
Rowinton Mistry, the Toronto-based, Bombay-born writer, reading from his novel Family Matters, shortlisted for the Booker Prize. I think it should have won. It takes us to Bombay and a battle between two family factions with an aging patriarch in the middle.
Over the thrumming of the rain, a hammer commenced its noise somewhere in the building while he fumbled with the tight new buttons. No one considered the problems of the old and the frail, the way they packaged shirts for sale with impregnable plastic wrappers, pins stuck in all the trickiest places, cardboard inserts jammed hard under the collar. He smiled as he thought about Roxana, her husband, and their 2 sons. He'd never imagined delighting in her as a tiny baby, that one day she would be grown up and have her own children. He wondered if all fathers marveled like him.
More stories from far away. My choice for best first novel of the year, and a great gift for lovers of new fiction, medical student Daniel Mason's novel, The Piano Tuner, which starts out in late 19th century London and quickly carries us to the backlands of Burma, where warlords reign supreme.
He dreamed. He dreamed that he was riding a Shan pony, that they were galloping, that in the pony's hair were twisted flowers that spun in the air like pinwheels as they moved through the paddy, past costume ghosts, choreographed flashes of color against an infinite green. And he awoke. He awoke and he saw the land was barren, and burnt rice stalks swayed in a slight breeze, and out of the earth grew mountains of karst, crag towers that hid golden statues of the Buddha, rising from the floors of caves like stalagmites, so old that even the earth had begun to dust them with deposits of carbonate. And he dreamed again, and as they passed, he could see into the caves, for they were lit by the lights of pilgrims who turned to watch the strange foreigner. And behind them, the Buddhas trembled and brushed off their lime coats and hovered, also watching, for the trail was lonely and few Englishmen ever passed this way.
Coming home now, I want to suggest an anthology edited by Marita Golden and E. Lynn Harris for the Hurston Wright Foundation, the literary society that awards an annual prize to promising young black writers. Tons of writers donated their work for this collection. It's called Gumbo, and some of my favorite writers are included, like Connie Porter with an excerpt from her novel Imani All Mine, and Edwige Danticat with a story called The Dewbreaker.
I've been inside me to the place I ain't never wanted to know. That's what I was thinking to tell Bet when she asked me why I wasn't in school this past week. I say to her, I've been sick, which is good enough for her to know about my business. I don't need her digging up some bone and passing it around. Last thing she need to know is the truth, that I missed school because of him. I ain't saying his name. I ain't never, ever gonna say it. I won't ever put it in my mouth. I don't even want it in my mind because it's all connected to his face. And the day I seen his face in the cafeteria 3 weeks ago, I thought I was gonna die right there, holding a tray of tacos.
She was telling her husband and daughter about a case she'd recently heard reported on a religious cable access program about a 12-year-old girl who cried crystal tears. From the front passenger seat, the daughter had just blurted out, "Ouch!" One of those non sequiturs Anne would rather not hear come out of her grown child's mouth, but that her daughter sometimes used as a shortcut for more precise reactions to anything that was not easily comprehensible. It was either ouch, cool, okay, or whatever, a meaningless chorus her daughter had been drawing from since she was 14 years old.
Then there's the first nonfiction volume edited by Dave Eggers of Staggering Genius fame in a new series called Best Non-Required Reading of the Year, a sort of Gen X anthology. This comes both in a hardback and in a 3-CD set, with Eggers leading off with a sort of non-introduction.
Instead of an introduction, I give you this. The pool lights were never on, but always there was another light from street lights or from the moon. Round in toilet tank white and licking itself felinely. And the light, whatever its source, would allow us to see the pool's edges and each other. This was high school and it was humid. In the pool, someone would always float as if he were dead. Someone would lurk like a squid in the deep end and yank your legs from below. And we'd have to get out and get any clothes we'd taken off and then jump the fence or the hedge or the wall and get back to the car before the pool owners awoke or the cops came. The convertible we'd borrowed was wet and cool, and we sank down into the seats, six of us squirming together for warmth, Drew starting the car and going, keeping the headlights off for a block, the wind cooler now. Lying on top of each other while horizontal in the back seat, watching the tops of trees as we passed underneath, the car so quiet, so quiet. I don't know why it should have been so quiet, such a big car and so full of people, but I remember no noise in that car. From pool to pool to pool.
Allison struggled away from her white Renault, limping with the weight of the last of the pumpkins. She found Clark in the twilight on the twig and leaf-littered porch behind the house. Allison lowered a big pumpkin and let it rest on the porch floor.
Short stories for Clark stuffing the story lover's stocking. You've got to give Tell Me Mary Robeson's collected stories, 30 of them. This one, Yours, is one of my all-time favorites.
On Clark's long lap. "Now, nothing weird or surreal," she told him. "Carve just a regular face. These are for kids." Late into the night, Allison and Clark gutted and carved the pumpkins together at an old table set out on the back porch. They worked over newspaper after soggy newspaper, using paring knives and spoons and a Swiss Army knife that Clark liked for the exact shaping of teeth and eyes and nostrils.
For the past few years, you couldn't go to the movies without seeing a Philip K. Dick novel translated to the big screen. Total Recall, Minority Report, Imposter. Vintage has now reprinted more than a dozen of Philip Dick's old books and just brought out his selected stories, edited by the writer Jonathan Lethem, who, like me, is one of his big fans.
This is the opening to Adjustment Team, a short story from early in Philip K. Dick's career. It was bright morning. The sun shone down on the damp lawns and sidewalks, reflecting off the sparkling parked cars. The clerk came walking hurriedly, leafing through his instructions, flipping pages and frowning. He stopped in front of the small green stucco house for a moment, and then turned up the walk, entering the backyard. The dog was asleep inside his shed, his back turned to the world. Only his thick tail showed. "For heaven's sake," the clerk exclaimed, hands on his hips. He tapped his mechanical pencil noisily against his clipboard. "Wake up, you in there." The dog stirred. He came slowly out of his shed, head first, blinking and yawning in the morning sunlight. "Oh, it's you? Already?" He yawned again.
Jimmy's got a coil, coil, coil. Jimmy's got a coil, and she certainly can hear me. When you see
A couple of cold, rainy Sunday afternoons ago, I got dragged to a concert in downtown Washington and stayed enthralled to hear a striking collaboration, the playful poetry of E.E. Cummings set to music by New York composer Ellen Mandel and sung beautifully by Cincinnati tenor and actor Todd Almond. I discovered that there's a CD of the same program. It's called A Wind Has Blown the Rain Away. I wish I could give it to every poetry lover I know to remind them that spring is coming, and with this music, sooner than later.
In just spring, when the world is mud luscious, the little lame balloon man whistles far and wee, and Eddie and Bill come...
Meanwhile, it's still winter, and we're all still hunting for wonderful gifts. And I've got one more recommendation, one more fusion of words and music. Alfred Appel Jr.'s profusely illustrated and persuasively argued book called Jazz Modernism. Appel helps us to see and hear how Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong and Charlie Parker joined ranks with 20th century literary modernists James Joyce and Gertrude Stein and Hemingway to construct, out of the sounds of everyday life, the magical universe we all still inhabit. And this book isn't just a great argument and a great gift. It swings you right into the holidays.
Magnolia trees at night sparkle and bright. Fields of cotton look wintry white. When it's Christmas time and new
Our reviewer, Alan Chews, teaches writing at George Mason University in Virginia. His book, Listening to the Page, Adventures in Reading and Writing, is just out in paperback. For a complete list of our holiday book picks, check our website, npr.org.
You'll see a Dixieland Santa Claus leading the band to a good old Creole beak. Golly, what a spirit, you can only hear it down on Basin Street. Your cares will disappear when you hear, hallelujah, St. Nicholas is here. When it's Christmas time anew, I...